Dot org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Some have called this a boom time for technology. They're right, but the phrase boom time might indicate a phase that we're going through. In truth, we live in an age in which technology plays an increasing role in almost every part of our lives with no indication of ever slowing down. Kids who have never known a time without glowing screens, keyboards, and environments connected to the internet are particularly adept at navigating this new world. It just seems natural to them. And kids today are ready, willing, and able to take command of that world. They're doing more than just playing computer games. They're building websites and servers and robots and maintaining their own computers. They're also writing code to do all of this. Computer science advocates point to this as evidence of a need to teach computer science and code writing as a regular part of the educational experience in lower and lower grades. Among them, our guests this hour. Adelglass is the founder of Waxaw Kids Coders and director of the Charlotte Technology Learning Center. He volunteers his time at the South Providence School in Union County to teach game programming to their computer club. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Pat Jungpratit is director of education for Code.org, a nonprofit dedicated to promoting computer science education. He hopes to bring computer science opportunities to every school and student in the country and is currently a national voice on K-12 computer science education. He's featured in the book American Teacher, Heroes in the Classroom, and he joins us from my old stomping ground, Silver Spring, Maryland. Welcome to the program, Pat.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. And Bill Kent is the Vice President of Development for CyberKids Robotics, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to improve and expand STEM education in North and South Carolina. He spent 15 years in the corporate world as a programmer and systems engineer and now designs and develops education robotics programs for students in grades 4 through 12. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
What exactly does it mean? I'm not sure who to ask this question of. What exactly does it mean to write code? Pat, you're the code.org guy. Tell me about that. What does it mean?
All right. So code is just the instructions that you give to a computer to execute a program. And so to write code means to basically the same thing as programming. So a lot of folks hear the term coding. That's a popular term these days, but really the term that's been in use since the beginning is just the term programming. So coding is writing a program.
And this is what you're doing, are you not, in Waxaw with Waxaw Kids Coders, Ken?
That's correct. And I started this business primarily to get kids excited about coding through summer camps and through workshops, learning games and robotics.
Do kids come to you saying, I want to code? Or do they come to you because they want to learn more about computers and they learn coding in the process?
That's a great question. I get a little bit of each. There are kids that come in really excited about it. They want to learn how to program games, and they want to learn more about robotics. And then some kids come in not knowing what they're in for, and their parents just bring them in. Mm. And in the process, they become very excited about it.
And is this not unlike when I was a kid, the big thing was Heathkit. You tried to build your own stereo or your own amplifier or your own radio or something, and that's where the interest was. And some kids like to tinker with cars because dad used to you can't do that anymore, but maybe if you learn computer coding, you can. Is this kind of like that now?
Yes. One of the things our students do is the coding is kind of the completion of the task. They build a robot, and so we teach them to build robots, and a lot of them are built out of Lego pieces, mm-hmm. your traditional Lego pieces you grew up with. And then they've got this robot that they've built and designed, and it can't do anything. And so that's where the coding comes in. They have to program it to do what they want it to do.
Now, most of us will never work in IT. The closest we'll get to working with a computer is doing something in Word or sending an email, and that's really the extent of what we want to do. And most of us, to do what we want to do, are willing and able to go to a store and buy software off the shelf, install it, and let it do its thing. Why is it important to provide education for every school-age child, because this is your position, on how to write code?
Mike, can I answer that question?
Sure can.
This is Pat. Yeah, sure. So you know, you were talking about how back in your day when you were a kid, the idea was to get these kits together to make speakers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'd say it's probably it maybe is the same thing these days, just now with coding. But what I'd hope it to be is different. I'd hope it to be a situation now where kids are using technology, in this case, digital technology, computing, to do anything that they want to do. So rather than just creating particular things like robots or video games or apps, which are, you know, wide-ranging in themselves in terms of applications. You can use a robot for many things. You can create an app for many things. I'd hope that they can really expand their understanding of what coding can do and reach into new fields. For example, I went to a marriage retreat recently, and the marriage counselor, the person who was running the workshop, said that was wondering if someone could create an app to help, to help husbands and wives communicate better with one another and have something to say other than talking about kids and money or the job. And so he was talking about an app and an algorithm that would work with a book that he created. And so I would hope that when kids hear these things or hear about other things in their world, whether it's choosing what playground to play at or anything, they think about how computing can help and innovate in those areas.
But back in the day, when they taught auto repair or shop in high school, that was considered vocational education. It was almost like an elective. Not every child took that. Some people who were interested in it had a bent toward that took it. If I understand this correctly, the three of you are advocating that every child take some sort of computer science class, which will include or not include coding at some point in time. Why wouldn't this, given the fact that we're not all going to be computer programs, why wouldn't this be considered a vocational elective as opposed to something every child takes throughout the early years of their education?
Well, one of the things that we found is that when students learn to code and learn to write their own programs, it kind of frees them up. They can solve their own problems. They can use the technology that they have in their hands and in their pockets to solve their own problems and to create. It's kind of a problem-solving, creative concept. And if they know how to program, if they understand it just a little bit, they don't have to be great programmers. They don't have to be planning on being programmers as a career. But if they know how to do it, then it kind of frees them up and gives them some insight into how things operate, how the cell phone operates, that kind of stuff.
If this were to happen, for instance, if Union County Schools adopted this as a K-12 piece of the curriculum, wouldn't that put you out of business, Ken?
No, not exactly. I actually gave that quite a bit of thought. And
I bet you did.
But actually, I hope the schools get this kind of program, I can grow into something where it goes into further enrichment for kids that want to learn even more and go out into different areas and learn. Right now, I mostly focus on the basics and getting kids excited at a young age, because I think it's really important that kids embrace this at a young age before they start developing opinions about programming, because a lot of times, and we're going to have a young lady on the show talking about this,
yes,
too.
We are.
But one of the things that's important is getting these stereotypes kind of we don't have that many women in technology. I've worked in many different companies in coding for close to 20 years, and it's usually one or two women in a department. It's, you know, man's club.
Yeah, we did a program about this, about STEM, a couple of weeks ago, and this was a key component of that, that today, although women make up most of the college graduates and they use computers on an equal level with men, they are still woefully underrepresented in the technology field as programmers and as inventors of things, and their point of view is missing from a lot of the programs that are off the shelf, first of all. And secondly, they're missing out on what is going to be a wave of decent-paying to high-paying jobs in the computer industry because they're not studying this. You're saying that if you get them interested before they think it's a guy thing,
exactly,
then we're all better off. They're certainly better off.
Exactly. And you, one thing, the other thing about it, is, especially in technology, is the flexibility of hours. When I worked in the industry, you can work from home. It's a very flexible career, and it pays very well. And it's one of the few careers that you can actually teach yourself, and there are a lot of kids that did. I did years back.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a second. How would you assess the state of computer science education throughout the country, Pat?
Well, let me start off with North Carolina, actually, and talking about gender. I wanted to connect to what you guys were just talking about. In North Carolina, so you were talking about education, and I think Ken was talking about starting off early, and I totally agree. At Code.org, we start kids at the age of 4 or 5 years old. Basically, even before they read, we have a coding environment dedicated just to them that is very reading light. So it's more based off of like graphical icons for the user interface versus having to read. And certainly you don't have to type any code. It's a block-based language. But really when I talk about, the high school pipeline, going into college, then going further beyond that. In North Carolina, about 17% of the AP computer science exams taken in 2014 were taken by women. And that is the... and nationally, AP Computer Science shows the worst gender breakdown of all 30-plus AP exams. I think they're like either 34 or 37 AP exams, ranging from AP Bio, AP Calc, to AP Physics, and AP Studio Art. Well, AP Computer Science shows the worst gender breakdown year after year after year, and the percentage in North Carolina was about 17%, so a little bit below the national average. And that's troubling because, we're probably going to talk about, the dearth of computer science graduates in our nation. We're probably going to talk about, the number of jobs that are available and growth in the computing fields, but, women are totally, misrepresented among the students who are taking, high school computer science, then obviously being, prepared and even interested in getting a degree in computer science.
So how would you?
The high school numbers show themselves in the higher ed numbers as well, and obviously industry numbers.
So how would you assess the quality of the state of computer science education throughout the country?
I'd say it's growing. So back to AP Computer Science, and I mentioned AP Computer Science simply because it's the best source of national data on computer science enrollment. The AP Computer Science exam has grown at the highest rate of all AP exams. So it has the worst gender breakdown, but it's actually it's growing at the highest rate compared to all the other AP exams. So it's getting more and more popular after experiencing a decade-long disinterest. It's growing more and more popular. There are more and more kids interested in taking computer science nationally. We run a campaign called the Hour of Code during the National Computer Science Education Week for the last 2 years now, and companies around the nation, school districts, teachers of computer science, teachers of other subjects. I mean, a lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon, and lots of people were already on the bandwagon who are super excited and are able to do more because of just it.
Because now when you talk about AP class, you're talking about high school. But can you say that you shouldn't wait till high school and it shouldn't be an elective? I'm going to ask you why, for an answer to why, when we come back. We're talking about computer science and computer science education on Charlotte Talks today. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Culture and Heritage Museums, presenting Sarah Jarosz, an award-winning singer-songwriter who blends contemporary folk, Americana, and roots music, April 3rd at the McKelvey Center. Tickets at chmuseums.org. The world has always been full of flashpoints, hotspots where clashes over politics boil over, and author and political scientist George Friedman has made a career out of forecasting what the future holds in terms of power and conflict. visit around the world in 2009. He made predictions for the next 100 years, and he'll share some of them with us tomorrow at 9. Next week, April 2nd, next Thursday at 7, we will be doing a program at the Evening Muse, a musical conversation with experts from Charlotte's music industry and the band Sinners and Saints. We'd like you to be there for that, and you can find out more information at WFAE.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, nearly 10,000 U.S. military personnel remain in Afghanistan after combat forces withdrew last year. A meeting between U.S. and Afghan officials this week, prospects for congressional approval of additional troops, and the future of security in the region.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about kids and computers and coding and computer science education with three advocates of that in the school systems beginning in kindergarten and going right on through the 12th grade. Ken Adelglass is founder of Waxaw Kids Coders and director of the Charlotte Technology Learning Center. Bill Kent is vice president of development for Cyber Kids Robotics. And Pat Young-Pratt is a director of education at code.org. Are your kids coding? Did they learn themselves or from somebody else? I mean, we'd like to hear from you about your child's thirst for learning about computers and about computer coding. You can reach us on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE or via email, charlottetalks@wfae.org. You said, Ken, you've told us that you shouldn't wait. Kids should not wait until high school to study this, and that computer science classes should not be an elective. Why?
That's correct. The main reason is because when kids are younger, they start to form their opinions about things. And especially with the media making technology mostly a boys thing, mm-hmm. when girls take my classes and they come to my school, they actually enjoy it just as much as the boys do. And then they don't have that opinion anymore. Hey, you know what? Coding isn't that thing that only boy geniuses do, and it's very accessible.
But there will be people who say, we're already asking the schools to teach so much, and if you teach history, history grows by leaps and bounds every year. How do you fit this yet another class into the curriculum for every grade, K through 12? Doesn't it take away from something else? The flip side would be, does it help them excel in other areas because they understand this? What's the answer there?
Well, absolutely. When I'm usually asked that question, the answer is there's a lot of talk, you know, about STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about robotics and game programming, you have all those aspects all together. So you can actually teach a math class. And in the past, when you took math, you always hear kids saying things like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. Why do I even have to learn this?
Exactly.
When you bring in game program, you bring in robotics, all these things that you learn in math and physics, all those type of things get applied and you see it in action. Just a simple example in game programming, when you learn about plotting on an X and Y axis, that is the core of 2D programming. You're putting objects and sprites and actors on a game board using an X and Y coordinates. And also physics, when they interact, you're talking about density, acceleration, velocity. All these things can be combined into a science class, into a math class, even into language arts, describing what your game is doing. All these things can be combined into different classes, and I think that's what kids really enjoy doing.
And that's why we should teach it, not purely for the love or the interest in computer science, but because it helps out in other areas and it shows application for things that they're learning out of context.
Absolutely. And then it gives it context.
Right.
And it makes it exciting to kids. And I find when kids learn this way, and I present it to kids that way too. Hey, remember in your math class when right. And they're like, oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, no. It really works.
Yeah, one of the things that we found out is when our robotics teams are building the robot and programming the robot, we found out that if we give them some math calculations to do, a lot of times one of the students on the team will hand the calculations to someone else and say, here, you do this. I'm not good at math. And we show them the practical application. We'll pull out a paper protractor and they'll learn, you know, what 45 degrees means. And when a robot is having to move 45 degrees, it clicks, and you can see it in their faces. You can see it in their eyes. And at a younger level, at a younger age, they're not afraid to try things. They haven't gotten into this, oh, I may break it kind of concept. Right. And so they're more adventurous. They're more and the robotics programming and coding complements the math, the science, the physics that they're learning in other courses.
But now, Ken, a few minutes ago you said, and I quote, I taught myself how to do this. And kids today are teaching themselves how to do this. And kids who are really, really, really interested in this will take the time and discover how to do this. So if kids are teaching themselves, why do we need to have it in schools?
Well, not all kids are teaching themselves. And I think it's a certain kind of kid that teaches themselves. I was always a hobbyist as a kid, and I was always the type of person that had to know how things worked. Mm-hmm. But there are kids that need a mentor. And as a matter of fact, when I was learning, my very first computer was this old thing it was a Timex Sinclair 1000. This is going back to 1980. And I hooked this thing to the back of my TV set, the same way you set up your Wii's and your game systems today. And what I did was programmed what was in the manual. And back then, there wasn't a whole lot. The manual is a 2-page manual, and I was very excited to write a basic program. But beyond that, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
And had I had a mentor, or had I known somebody that was a programmer that could have showed me a new direction, then that would have made it worthwhile and actually would have advanced me even further.
And a lot of us learn programming from the School of Hard Knocks. So if we'd had someone teaching us how to do it correctly, we could have saved a lot of time and been a lot more productive.
Well, Pat Young-Pratt, you are Director of Education for an organization called Code.org. You offer online courses already. Are they not good enough to stand in for official classes in schools?
Well, actually, so our courses, we did a little internal research on enrollment in our courses, and we discovered that so our courses can be done in class or out of school, and we discovered that in class there's a higher completion rates, but also higher diversity rates in terms of the students who are taking the classes. So what happens when you leave it just out of school is you get this level of self-selection based off of stereotypes that are, like Ken and Bill already said, are developed at a very young age. But when you have kids exposed to it in the elementary school classroom as part of the school day, which couldn't be, you were talking about how do you fit it into the school day. In the elementary school classroom, you can fit it in as a special 1 hour a week for a semester, just like music or art. And when you expose kids to it in that way, you get more completion. You also get better diversity numbers.
Colin on Facebook says, my kids are coding, learning from some of the great websites that teach it. I don't encourage them to pursue a career in it, though. Work laws in right-to-work states, like this one, allow employers to abuse IT people until they're exhausted and no longer able to work or function. Beyond that, it's largely being outsourced. And I did have a question about that, because in the last several weeks, we've done programs on STEM. We've done this program. We're doing this program now about computer science. And we keep hearing that we need – that there are going to be all these jobs available in the next 5 years, actually, that we will not be able to fill in this country because we're not bringing online enough computer science graduates, and particularly not enough women computer science graduates. But in – prior to the recession, we were hearing from IT people saying that their jobs, these so-called high-paying jobs, were being outsourced to places overseas because they could get the talent cheaper. Is that not going to continue?
Well, I've been a web developer for close to 20 years now, and I have definitely seen outsourcing, but there certainly is demand right here at home. There's always issues. Cultural barriers.
But if we get a bunch of kids really interested in this because, A, they like computers in the first place, and you can't get the screens out of their hands in the second place, and suddenly we're teaching, beginning in kindergarten, computer science, so that by the time they get out of high school, they really get this and maybe want to pursue a career in it. Even though we have all these jobs, if we're continuing to look for the lowest paid employee, there won't be jobs that they'll want to take, will there be?
Well, we've always encouraged students to, you know, if you have the skills and you have the tools, you can create your own job. I mean, there's a lot of independent programmers. There's a lot of independent companies that are seeking programmers. And so, you know, if you've got the skill, if you don't have the skills, you're out of the game. Mm. But if you've got the skills, you have the knowledge, you can create your own company.
Pat?
Yeah, I would say to future, the advice I'd give a student, whether in 8th grade or 12th grade, for the future would be to think about computer science not just by itself, but think about it in concert with biology, or think about it in concert with social science. For example, one of the programs I actually remember from high school that I wrote was a simulation of Sigmund Freud's id, ego, and superego theory, which is a pretty weird thing to model using code, but now, I mean, social science wouldn't be where it is right now without computer science. And so I would suggest to folks, if they're worried about getting computing jobs or outsourcing of jobs, I would suggest that they just they combine their computer science experience with experience in some other field.
And you, I believe, Ken, have called the need for computer graduates urgent.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I just left the corporate world last year, mm-hmm. and I still get phone calls from recruiters, and lots of them too, wanting me to come back. And I'm pretty dedicated to what I'm doing now. I'm working for myself with Waxaw Kid Coders, and I also do some consulting work doing web design and web development.
And the need is urgent because there are not enough graduates today?
There's just not enough people to fill the jobs. Mm-hmm. You can talk to any recruiter in Charlotte, and they'll tell you.
If women hopped on board, mm-hmm. As we've said, they're woefully underrepresented in this field, but if they were to become more so or equally represented as men are, would that urgency go away? Would there be too many people for not enough jobs?
Over time, but I think technology, most of the jobs being created now, I believe, are in technology. There's every day you see a new project on Kickstarter. There's always new things coming up. So there's so many new opportunities, and we haven't even seen the beginning of this yet. I think we're in the infancy stage, especially with robotics. You don't even hear the term roboticist as a career.
No, never heard that term.
Yeah,
ever.
No, you'll probably within the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to hear that as a career term.
I was going to ask about that because we have a couple of robotics people on the program, but we're about to meet another one in a second or two. But when we talk about computers, all of a sudden in the last several years when we've talked about it, we hear more and more about robotics and about robots. Why is that?
Well, I think it's always had this kind of mysterious side to it, you know, from the Star Wars and the robots, you know, taking over the world, that kind of thing. But, robots are basically machines that can do things for you, and they don't have to be human in form. But and we teach students that, you know, you can take a machine – you can program it, write code, and then have it solve problems and have it do repetitive tasks. And, one of the things we have a droid robot that we take into the schools. And, you know, we're basically teaching students to, you know, program the robot to put toothpaste on a toothbrush. Instead of using machines to, you know, to play games and to do that all the time, you can actually use machines to help, you know, mankind and solve human problems.
Well, back in the Pleistocene age, in the mid-80s, I did a couple of stories for television on this. We went into some factories in South Carolina that were using robots that seemed very high tech then. I'm sure by today's standards they would be like the printing, like Gutenberg printing press. But it was amazing to watch these machines work. They had been programmed to within a fraction of an inch to do certain things, and they did them perfectly, repeatedly, and quickly. That's what you're talking about. You're not just talking about these things that walk around the house dusting like Rosie the Robot from whatever that TV show, whatever that cartoon was. You're talking about things that are in place, fixed, that do the same thing over and over again.
Yes, and we teach the students, you know, robots don't make mistakes. People do. And so, you know, if you program a robot to do things repetitively, you know, precise, it's going to do it over and over again.
Now, you know this next guest that we're about to introduce here.
I sure do.
She is Abigail Loeffler. She's in the 6th grade at Belmont Middle School in Belmont, and she's part of the all-girls robotics team, which is called Beauty and the Bots. Is that right?
Yes.
Beauty and the Bots. And every year, the school's first Lego League robotics team is given a problem that they have to answer through technology, and we're going to talk to you about that process now. Welcome to the program, Abigail.
Thank you.
What are you most interested in? Are you more interested in computers and learning to program a computer or code for a computer? Or are you really more interested in what robots can do for us?
I'm interested in both, like robots, you can program them to make them move and do tasks, and then computers, you can program them to do apps and things.
And when did you become interested in this? How old are you in the sixth grade?
11? I'm 12.
12? So when did you first become interested in this?
Last summer at Engineering Camp Charlotte.
Stop right there. You went to engineering camp?
Yes.
When did you become interested in engineering? You're good at math, right?
Yes.
So engineering camp did what for you? Why did you want to go?
I wanted to go because I like to learn about technology and engineering and how things work.
What is it about technology that lights your fire?
Because you can understand how things work and you can make things work. And
now, I had a college-age student in here a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about computer science and about going into the computer science area for a job, and she has always been interested in this, and she is usually one of two or three girls in a class. You're on an all-girls robotics team.
Yes.
That's got to be liberating. It's got to be really fun because you're in there with people like yourself, not these dorky boys, right?
Yes, because we since we're all girls, we teamwork, I think it works better for us. So I think we're better as a team since we're all girls.
But when you're in a classroom with boys and girls, are you one of the few girls who's really interested in this? Or do you find that other girls, most of the girls, are interested in this?
Well, there's some girls that are interested in it, uh-huh, and then some aren't. But I think probably exactly half might be more interested in this.
Mm-hmm. So again, try to explain to me what it is about technology that really makes you excited. Because some kids, you know, all kids I think like computers, but they just like them to do whatever it is they want to do. Hit a button on an iPad, make the app work to play a game, or do something on an iPhone and make the phone do what it wants, you know, send a text, you know, whatever. But you're really interested in how this works and what more you can do with it. Why?
Because if you understand how it works, then you can just, like, it makes sense, like how they create them, how they create apps, and then you can, like, you can create your own apps and games, and then you'll understand how yours works and like name brand apps, how they work.
Now, Gaston County is really kind of interesting, and this may surprise some people, but Gaston County really teaches this.
Yes, the Gaston County School, we've partnered with the Gaston County School System, and they have a robotics team in every elementary and middle school in the county. And at the first Saturday of March of every year, all the teams come together, and they have what's known as Robo Gaston. It's a robotics competition, and Abigail's team from Belmont Middle actually won the middle school championship at this year's competition.
Really?
As an all-girls team.
We're going to come back and find out how you did that and what exactly you did to do that to win it. We have to take a break. We're here with Abigail Leffler, sixth grade member of the Beauty and the Bots all-girls robotics team at Belmont Middle School in Belmont. Debbie Elmore brought her. She's the coach, the teacher, the genius behind the power behind the throne, so to speak. Ken Adelglass, Pat Youngprodit, and Bill Kent are also with us. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the North Carolina 529 College Savings Plan, helping parents and grandparents save for college education with tax benefits and investment options. NC529.org. Nearly 10,000 U.S. military personnel remain in Afghanistan after combat forces withdrew last year. And on the Diane Rehm Show today, they'll explore a meeting between the U.S. and Afghan officials this week, prospects for congressional approval of additional troops, and the future of security in the region. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. And coming up on this program on Monday, North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory will be with us. We'll open up the phones during that show so that you can ask your questions of the governor, and you can get in touch with us by Facebook, Twitter, or email in advance or during the program as well. The governor on Charlotte Talks Monday at 9.
Do you remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
My first time ever?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
People just talking like normal people, telling me about the world.
There's always one story that makes me wake up.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again tomorrow to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition from 5 until 9 on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about computer science and robotics in the classroom with Abigail Leffler, who is the beneficiary of this. She's in the sixth grade at Belmont Middle School and a member of the Beauty and the Bots All-Girls Robotics Team. Ken Adelglass is founder of Waxaw Kids Coders and director of the Charlotte Technology Learning Center. Bill Kent, vice president of development for Cyber Kids Robotics. And Pat Young-Pradit is director of education at code.org. And Pat, you acknowledge that kids are constantly using technology, but you echo something that Abigail just said. You say that it's critical for them to learn how the basics work and how to create technology, not just consume it. Why? I mean, I use the radio and TV every day and could not tell you how it works. It's a miracle to me. You can't have sound go through the air without wires. I drive to work every day, have no clue how the car works. So why is it important that we know how the computers work?
That's a great, actually, the last thing that you mentioned, a car and not knowing how it works, and wondering whether we even need to know how it works, whether it matters. That's something that comes up often, actually, and people ask me about that. So a computer is a lot different than a car. A computer is a creative medium, and that's why it's important to understand not just how to use it to do our taxes or write a Word document, but also how to create with it, because we can create with it. A car, on the other hand, it's really just for transportation. There is no, it's not a creative medium. You don't create other things with a car. You just use it to travel. Whereas with a computer, you can do so many things. I mean, the world we live in right now, we don't live in the industrial age anymore. We live in the digital age. And the more and more kids, young women, young men that we get to understand how to participate as a creator in this age, the better, because we've seen how computer science innovates in so many fields. Imagine if you get more and more young women like Abigail coding. Imagine what's going to happen because of that 5-10 years down the line. That's why computing, you know, matters more than just a application thing, but as a creative.
And I would think when you're talking about coding, you're talking about creating something. You're talking about making this machine do your bidding, to do whatever it is that you want. But when you're talking about doing it for a robot, you are seeing a three-dimensional creation do your bidding. It's not just dots on a screen. It's an actual thing, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And one of the cool things that we've done is Sherwood Elementary School, again, another school in Gaston County, their students, fourth and fifth grade students, programmed a humanoid robot to do the cha-cha slide.
I saw this online yesterday.
And it's
first of all, the thing is cute. I want it. It's a cute looking thing. But it moves, and it looks like little Michael Jackson doing its little dance.
Yeah, and every movement you see the robot done was programmed and coded by the students. The music is being played through the robot. Yeah. It's not being played separately. And the robot is actually listening for words. Like in the song, when it says to the left, the robot is doing voice recognition and moves to the left when the song says move to the left, and to the right when it says move to the right.
On the video that I saw yesterday online, you could just see the legs of the students behind the robot in the shot, and the students were doing the steps with the robot, but the robot was more accurate.
Yes.
Than the kids were. It was really fascinating and very fluid. It wasn't herky-jerky.
Well, what you didn't see was the hours and hours of the robot falling on its face for the 10 weeks prior to that before they got it perfected. And so, you know, a lot of it is the, you know, you learn from your mistakes, you learn from failures.
So, Abigail, the Beauty and the Bots All-Girls Robotics Team won
the middle school championship for Gaston County.
What did you win it for? What did your robot do?
Our robot, we programmed it to do tasks, and they're each worth point values. And so we got, like, the second highest point value, and we did a project where for Holy Angels, which is a place where different where people with disabilities live, and we created an app for them. It's a
well. Let's talk about the robot first. The robot looked like what? Was it, did it look like a little human being, or was it a machine that looked like a machine that does stuff by itself?
It's like a machine, and it's made of Legos.
I know that Lego sponsors this, but it, to me, Legos are pieces of plastic.
Well, these are not your grandfather's Legos. Okay. These robots have light sensors and color sensors and sound sensors.
And Lego makes all this
stuff? Yes, it's all made by Lego.
You buy it off the shelf at that you can. Toy store? Really?
Sure can.
Okay, so you made this robot, and what kinds of tasks did it do?
Well, it can, like, open a door, and then we had it, like, there's a soccer goal, and it, we gave it a ball, and then it went around, and it shot the ball, and it went in the goal and scored.
So to do that, to make this object, not human, do this, how many hours did it take to write the code that told it what to do when?
Lots of hours. Like, we practiced on Wednesdays and Fridays, and even on some Saturdays, we practiced for hours just programming our
robot.
For
those of us who don't know anything about this, and that's me, what? Give me an example of a line of code. Can you recite a line? Can you, instead of typing it, can you tell me what it is?
Well, you can, like, you can have, like, there's different motors. So, like, you have each wheel is a motor, like the A and the B motor, and the B and C motor.
Okay.
And so then you can have, like, the A and B, or B and C motor move, like, however many rotations you want it to do.
So how would you do that? How would you tell the computer inside the robot to make the A motor make three rotations? What would you say to the computer?
You would drag a block on the computer, and then you would type in, like, however many rotations you want to do, and then you would plug it into the robot and download it and then run your robot.
And one of the things they do is there's actually some mathematical calculations that go in before that. They have to take a tape measure and measure, you know, the exact number of centimeters they want the robot to move and the number of degrees they want it to turn, and then they calculate How does 10 centimeters convert to rotations?
You're making these kids use the metric system?
Well, what happens is we give them a tape measure.
Why do you hate America?
Well, what happens is we give them a tape measure that has inches on one side and centimeters on the other side, and they quickly find out that they can be more precise and accurate using centimeters. And so we don't tell them. We kind of let them decide, let them see that from themselves.
Now, this Holy Angels project that you did, you created an app for these kids at Holy Angels, which is a place where kids with disabilities, physical disabilities and other kinds of they face educational obstacles. You created an app. What gave you the idea for the app? You visited first, right?
Yes, we visited Holy Angels, and they said that the residents need more apps because they can't
find... For their iPads.
Yes, for their iPads, because they can't find many that they can actually use, so they have to get them, like, made by certain people, and they said that they need more apps, so we decided to create one.
What kinds
for
of
them.
Apps? What kinds of apps do they need?
Well, like the one we created, it's like a palm tree in the background, and then there's coconuts, and they're falling down, and so they have to use the reflexes to tap the falling coconuts and recognize the coconut, and then it will make noises once they tap it.
How is that different from some of the other readily available apps that are out there?
Well, like apps that we use are like they would probably be faster, and so it's harder. But for them, we try to make it slower so they have time to tap the coconuts.
And this was a team effort, both building the robot and creating this app and designing the app and making it work. It was a team effort.
Yes.
Working on teams can be challenging.
Our team, I don't think it's challenging since we're all girls, and so our team, it's easy to work with each other since we're all girls.
Really, you think?
Yes.
Okay. There's no fighting, or does a team leader emerge? Do certain ideas or by certain people tend to rise to the top and to the chagrin of some of the others, or are you willing to compromise?
Not really. Most of the time, if we have a disagreement, we normally vote, and then and then we also have like pros and cons about each one.
Now, are most of the people on your team experienced? Have they been doing this for a long time, or are they sometimes first-timers. This is the first time they've ever done something like this.
Well, we have three people who have done it before and three people who haven't done it before.
Okay, and those who haven't done it before, when you bring new kids in, are they intimidated by this or are they just gung-ho?
No, in our program, we actually encourage the veterans, as we call them, to mentor the younger students. And so that creates this unity and this teamwork that she's talking about. It develops through the mentoring process. Mm-hmm. And we start students in Gaston County. They start in the fourth grade.
Wow.
And so by the time they get to middle school, you know, some of them have had 2 or 3 years worth of experience on a robotics team. And it just changes as they move from elementary school to middle school.
So how often do you go to robotics, I guess, class for lack of a better term?
Well, we go every Wednesday and Friday. And then closer to competition, we sometimes go on Saturdays.
Wow. You don't mind that?
No.
So now you're going at least twice a week to robotics class. You're trying to think up these things to create, in your case, a robot and this app. You've made visits to Holy Angels to understand what they need in an app. You create the app. You refine the app. You give them the app. But it doesn't stop there. You actually went out and realized that they need more iPads.
Yes,
to run these apps.
Yeah, we've been taking donations for Holy Angels, and we've raised $1,500 over that. And so we're buying our apps and iPads for Holy Angels.
Good for you. Cyber Kids Robotics is working, I think, in 16 school systems and private schools with over 5,400 students.
Yes.
Are all these young people writing code, building robots, et cetera?
Yes. All the different teams that we work with are doing the same type of thing you hear from Abigail here. I mean, the main thing they're doing is they're learning teamwork. And then the coding and the programming is just kind of the platform or the basis we use to teach all the other things.
What other things?
Well, things like teamwork, communication. You can just hear from Abigail helping others, getting out in the community.
Right.
And it's all just part of the process of
How would you compare Mecklenburg school system or Union County school system in terms of what they do with computer science and robots to what Gaston is doing? Because it sounds like Gaston is really into this. This robo-Gaston thing is amazing.
Yeah, well, Gaston County is organized, from the central office level, and so it's supported from the top down.
Aren't they all?
Well, when it comes to technology, there's different viewpoints. You know, some schools, some principals have one idea, and another school, another principal have a different idea. But in Gaston County and also in Davidson County, every school, every elementary school has a funded robotics team from the central office.
Wow. Sam emails, on the topic of requiring children to learn coding, my two high school age kids took AP computer science in sequential years, and in both years, the teachers quit halfway through the class and a replacement could not be found. It was a disaster for their interest in coding because the school could not find a live teacher to lead students. The online NCVPS option, which I'm not sure what that is, did not work well for them. Where can high school age kids take a summer coding class for high school or college credit in Charlotte? My 16-year-old son could not take a CPCC Java class because he was under 17. Anybody have any suggestions?
Well, they could give me a call. I could set something up there.
That'd be Ken Adelglass, by the way.
Basically, I mostly deal with younger kids. I have gotten a lot of calls from parents who want their kids. I've tutored kids in Java programming, C#, and then that's really what I've worked in during my career.
And so. Pat, is that where code.org can also come in?
Well, yeah. So code.org has so to answer the question about where to go if you don't have a teacher in the classroom, there are some MOOCs available online, so massive online courses. There's one through our partner Amplify, and it's a mixture of a traditional MOOC that's purely online with instructional coaches, so live coaching as well. So it's kind of a good blend between the impersonal MOOC and the personal in-classroom teacher. So that's Amplify. But, you know, the whole issue of not having teachers is a big issue, and that's what code.org is basically. That's the meat and potatoes of what we do. We train thousands of teachers every year, K through 12, to teach computer science in the classroom so that we don't have situations where AP computer science teachers are leaving halfway through the year, whether they're, who knows what these teachers did. Did they go to industry? Did they just get fed up? Were they not supported? Either way, we're supporting teachers through a rigorous process of professional development so that they are excited about teaching computer science and continue teaching computer science, so we don't have this issue.
David on Facebook writes, at Harvard and MIT, they start their students and children on this fun and user-friendly resource called Scratch, starting from scratch. Easy to remember and a free and excellent way to familiarize yourself and your children with coding and some of the better minds and institutions. The site is scratch.mit.edu. And Tara on Facebook adds, Scratch is a great program. I am one of the local instructors for Girls Who Code, and that is the platform we use to teach. You're all familiar with that, Scratch?
Yes.
And your comment on it would be what?
Well, I was going to say, you were asking about Charlotte Mecklenburg. This coming Saturday at Mountain Island Lake Academy, we're going to have the Charlotte Mecklenburg Robotics Competition. And so there'll be a championship with 22 schools, just like that we had in Gaston County, starting at 9 o'clock at Mountain Island Lake Academy.
Okay. And finally, SkillStack Coding Arts on Facebook says, kids don't need to be babied. In fact, they actually prefer actual code on the command line. Those of us from the DOS era remember that. And teach it with the things that they love, like Minecraft, running servers, writing code for them, etc. Also, kids will teach other kids if you teach some first. Kids start clubs and classes themselves in the public system after you teach them. Have you found that to be the case, Abigail?
Yes.
You like teaching other kids to do what you already know how to do?
Yes.
Where do you want to go with this? What would you like to see happen with you in robotics or you in coding? Is this something you want to do, or is this just a fun thing to understand and learn?
Yes, I want to be an engineer or a Disney Imagineer, which they like create the roller coasters, and they have like robots they can use, and like the Magic Bands where you... like, we can use the pay and stuff. They created this.
I vote for the Imagineer thing. Abigail Leffler, whose teacher is Deb Elmore at Belmont Middle School in Gaston. Thanks to Pat Young-Pradit, Bill Kent, and Ken Adelglass for the hour as well.